Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
Hello, everyone. How's it going? I'm Jesse Klein. We're about to talk Iron Fist here on AfterBuzz TV. It's about to get kung fu in here after this.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hot sun.
I fought the law and the law won. I fought the law and the law won.
Guys, welcome to our singing after show. That's right, we're talking about Iron Fist. We're going to be talking about episodes 3 and 4, Rolling Thunder Cannon Punch, and the 8-diagram Dragon Palm. Yes, I looked at the board to remember those names.
I'd like to see him actually do those moves in these episodes,
you know? It
would
be fantastic to see that. I'm your host, Jesse Klein. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JessKlein1. That's JessKlein, the number one. And I am joined by the effervescent Katie Cullen. Katie, where can we find you?
Well, that's a hell of a word. Yeah. Hi, all my buddies. You can find me on the social medias at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. We have our hashtag on Twitter, ABTV Iron Fist. We have the live chat that's up on YouTube. If you have something to say, if you have questions or comments, throw them in the hashtag, throw them in the live chat. You may well get a shout out.
Awesome. So we're going to start off, we're talking here, we get in back with the drama of the legal world that is happening with Danny Rand.
Hence the opening song.
Yes, that's why we're talking about for. I Fought the Law and the Law One. We're just going to go through each of the storylines we got through. So Danny is trying to get his company back after being admitted to a mental hospital. He's trying to get it back. He has the two siblings keeping him away from it.
We have the lawyer back from Jessica Jones, and I missed her.
Hogarth, and I loved her introduction where Danny, like, remembers her. I loved the world where she was an intern at his father's company.
In the copy room with the uneven card table that she put a manual under because the legs were mine. It's just like, yep.
Like, he remembers all of that stuff. I like that Hogarth... Like, we've seen her kind of take a, even though Jessica Jones was so long ago, we've seen an arc from her.
Yeah.
Like, she decides to help Danny without any, like, real, like, she's not getting anything out of it.
No, she absolutely is.
Eventually.
He's convinced her that he's Danny Rand. And yeah. If she can make this case work, her firm on permanent retainer with this ridiculously huge Fortune 500 company...
Sure.
That's huge, and Danny has no concept of how huge that is. So that's a win-win for her.
I still feel like it's out of Hogarth's character, from the original Hogarth we see till the end of Jessica Jones, to take such a chance on a guy who just got out of a mental hospital, basically. Like, the fact that she's going to believe him and do what is essentially the right thing, whether she wants to or not.
He did have all the right answers, and it's stuff that no one would have written down. It's the kind of thing that you can't find online and say, here it is. And she had trick questions. Where was my office?
Yeah,
where did I sit?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, you can't look that on Rand Wikipedia.
Yeah, Randipedia. I love that he's been proving his identity by having these memories that you can't write down, that you can't find anywhere else.
Yeah,
and I love that that has been his proof of identity more than anything else in the series.
That's the part
of the writing I like.
The brown M&Ms from last episode.
The M&Ms are one of my favorite things that this series has done.
Yeah. So she is basically asking him, like, you need to find proof that you are who you say you are. And so for this, in this part of the show, a lot of it is Danny trying to find ways to prove himself. He goes to a record because he broke his leg or
he broke his arm
skateboarding
and was at this particular hospital.
And so he's looking for the x-rays and, there's a guy there who kind of kicks his ass. Like, this is a problem I have with Danny. It's like, I don't know what he's bringing to the table that Daredevil isn't bringing to the table.
Yeah.
Or that Luke Cage isn't bringing to the table.
Money.
He's bringing money. I guess
that's pretty much it.
I guess he's got that Batman factor.
And for me, it's like season one Oliver Queen. Well, what do you have? A lot of training on a place where no one can substantiate that I actually was.
Yeah.
And money.
Yeah.
Except that Oliver actually brings things to the table. And Danny's just kind of like, yeah.
He kind of got his butt kicked by this guy in the records room.
Admittedly, he did get jumped with brass knuckles. That'll rattle anyone.
He did. I just feel... if we're going to go with an overall thing that I want more out of this show is like the hallway fight in episode 4 was great, but like I want Danny to look powerful. And like so far Danny is kind of just like a dude in a poncho who can fight a little bit, but like Colleen Wing is by far the most badass person in this show.
I want to talk about this a little bit in the dojo, and I know we're kind of steering away from the records, but I want to talk about this because he's staying at the dojo, or he was for a chunk of time, out of the goodness of her heart.
Yes.
Full stop. And one of the conditions was, do not interact with the students. You don't touch them, you don't go near them, nothing. And just watching him go in and say, this is wrong, you're doing it wrong, and then whack that kid.
Yeah.
If this had been, I understand that his upbringing is this very super serious, very awful from the sounds of it, horrifyingly traditional upbringing for the past 15 years. Like, that I understand. But he knows full well that she told him, you do not interact with the students.
Yeah.
And he has recognized her as the master of this dojo and then summarily discarded whatever respect that title entails because he's Danny freaking Rand, I guess. And she comes in and tells him this is a safe space for these kids.
Yeah.
It is about teaching them to defend themselves, but it's also giving them a place where they're not getting wrecked by other factors of real life until you walked in and broke that.
Yeah, I wish...
So I'm pissed as hell at him because that's more of the entitled white guy acting that we've seen him doing.
Yeah.
And if he'd been in this dojo and if he'd had any respect for the master of the dojo as these traditions that were seemingly beat into him would entail, then he would respect her word and her rules because it is her dojo. But he thinks he's right and steamrolls right past all of that. Like, this is what kills me about the writing of Danny's character. He doesn't act like a guy who's been raised in a monastery / dojo for 3/5 of his life.
For sure. And I wish, because I know what the writers were trying to do. They were trying to show that Colleen Wing is this person who's taking these people who are in need under her wing and helping them. And like, yes, these are like, it helped. It was a really good character building moment for Colleen where it is like,
but it just makes us hate Danny more.
But the writers showed it by making Danny look like a prick. And not a prick, like, if he was, like, a guy who had, it was fish out of water, and, like you said, like, and he was there, and he was like, no, this is because this is how it goes honorably. But they'd already established the rules of the dojo, and that and that Colleen is the master, and that he has to do whatever she says. And because of that, it wasn't fish out of water, it was just being a dick, which is less interesting. There's a way you can make it... where you can make it because Danny is unaware of customs in the world. Like, there have been not a lot of fish out of water moments. I wish there were more. Like,
that's the best part of this. All the stuff with Big Al was great.
He's not freaking out about cell phones as much as he should. He should be like, really just like, what? We got attacked by aliens? Like, someone should tell him about the Avengers.
Someone should show him the footage of the event.
Yeah. Like, all of that kind of stuff. I think that the writers are really having this really difficult time is they need to show that Danny is obstinate and believes in his purpose. And at the same time, they're not finding a way to do that without just making Danny look like an entitled prick, which is, you know, that's your job as a writer.
Like, I get it if you think that you know better and if you think that someone's doing it wrong. And if that had been his second time stepping foot in the dojo and he thought he was helping, sure. Yeah. But he knew the rules.
Yes.
If this had been an episode one thing,
it would have been fine.
We would have been like, okay, we get it.
Yeah.
But this is episode 3, and he knows her well enough, and the rules were established, and this is just him being, I know better.
Yeah.
And that's not acceptable.
Talking about Colleen, we get these poor security guards who cannot do anything correct at the top of the show, cannot do anything correct. They have guns, and they have so far not been able to stop the least effective superhero in the Netflix series so far.
They're mooks in a Marvel show.
They're
hosed anyway.
They're worse off than Turk has been. Like, they are just getting beat. They say they're coming to protect Colleen. Colleen beats the crap out of them, notices that Danny is spidered up her ceiling, and gets them out, and Danny's like, I'll pay for the lock. But she beats the crap out of these guys, and again, that guy gets his toy broken. Like, his gun gets broken 3 times in 3 episodes. Like,
just stop carrying a gun, dude. Yeah, it's obviously not helping you.
Like, a gun with spikes on it, so someone can't grab it. Like, you can't have that gun, man. Colleen, really, really interesting, fun character. Someone who cares about our community. Yeah. And that's kind of what I'm hoping we get with Danny. And that's, we were talking about it before, and I think that the writers really gave themselves a large hill to climb with Danny Rand. I think it would have helped if he was an Asian American character. I know you guys talked about it last time. Yeah. I'm just saying, I think it would be easier. It's difficult, even as a white guy with no connection to Asian culture, it's difficult to watch a white guy tell an Asian person how to do their culture. And
you should teach Kung Fu.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, like, honey, I know you're trying, but please stop.
Like, it's really difficult to watch, and it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And
it's not like Jessica Jones, where we're supposed to be uncomfortable, because this is some uncomfortable stuff. I don't think anyone's aware.
We're supposed to like it.
And that's the problem.
So we get this Colleen moment. We get Colleen being a badass. It's more established. On the legal side, Hogarth gets a ceramic bowl.
I love this bowl, because this bowl has been on the front table since episode 1.
Exactly.
And that's, I actually noticed it early on, like, oh yeah, that's totally something that one of them made when they were a kid. I mean, who didn't make a coil pot in art somewhere between elementary and middle school?
But I think more telling is that Joy was given this bowl by her childhood friend, and she's now this very successful, very wealthy lawyer.
And still has it.
And she still has it prominently in this house that is full of way more expensive, way more impressive things. There is the ceramic bowl that's the first thing you see when you walk in.
But you keep things that are sentimental to you. I mean, mom still has the bunny-shaped jewelry holder that I made her in 6th grade, and I have a rough-hewn wooden plaque that came from my grandma's house that has a Bible verse on it. It's not the prettiest thing in my apartment, but it came from grandma's house.
You do. And what I'm doing is, a lot of times, and I think both of the panels here talk about how the writing is difficult. And I was just pointing out that this is a really good piece of writing.
Oh, absolutely.
That the bowl has been there, and that it shows, it's a show don't tell with Joy, is that even though Joy is manipulative, and we've seen her be manipulative before, there is a part of her that really does still care for Danny, always cared for Danny. She kept that pot of her dead best friend with her, and despite being this very successful, very wealthy person, you could easily put that in an attic or, like, somewhere hidden, or, like,
yeah,
or your bathroom.
But it's the first thing she sees when she gets home.
But to put it prominently in your foyer, if you want to be fancy.
Oh, it's a foyer. It is absolutely a foyer.
Says something really important about that character. And we see that, and it's immediately recognizable. Like, I didn't need to know where it came from or anything like that. I was like, oh, that's the pot from the foyer.
And I do love that it's green and yellow.
It's green and yellow.
Like,
Danny's,
it's a little
colors.
nudge. Like, yeah. Okay.
I think
the writing around Joy has been really good. Like,
yeah, for the most part, I agree, yeah.
Yeah, her character moments, a lot of what she says and does, I absolutely adore her as a character.
Yeah.
And in a lot of these very combat-heavy series, it's a little harder to fall in love with the characters who are non-combatants. And we had that scene with Joy and Colleen, and I'm like, yes, all of this, please.
Yeah,
I
we'll
would
get
watch
to
an
that
entire miniseries
sure.
of all of this.
Yeah.
But Joy's just wonderful, and she's kind of the heart of this series at this point.
And so we get to this thing where basically Ward is having people erase Danny's past.
Mm-hmm.
And any instance of Danny. Hogarth is saying, like, we don't have any records of, like, blood or, like, anything that you ever existed. And the one thing that they have is this pot that is from Danny to Joy, and it's got, like, a little thumbprint on it, and that's kind of their ace in the hole. Like, they bring that, and it proves that Danny is a match with it, and he gets a majority of Rand Enterprises.
They haven't even run the fingerprinting test yet, the thing, though. It's just, I'm sure this is a match.
Yeah.
Oh, well, shoot.
Yeah. Nothing's better than Hogarth with her smug win look. Well, it's really good.
Here's what gets me. You can absolutely run a DNA test against a dead person as long as you have a sample of their DNA somewhere.
There's also
And I'm sure that could be dug up, because what reason would they have to destroy every effect of his?
There's also no way that Danny's father did not have a DNA registry. Like, a wealthy businessman would have DNA all over the city. I'm saying he probably had children with other women. But no, he would also have DNA.
That's not what I meant, but yes.
He would also have DNA registered. Just, you're a businessman. With your doctor, you would have it. Like, it would be done easy.
Well, and also to kind of guard against, oh, well, this person's your illegitimate son.
Exactly.
All right, let's prove it.
Let's prove it, yeah.
So you can't do a DNA test. He's dead. It's just like, are we sure? Did we just... Science, y'all. Can we Google?
Yeah. We also see the repercussions of Harold visiting Danny in the mental hospital. We get this BDSM scene where he's told to kneel, and he does. For what is... That's obviously Madame Gao.
Come on.
It's obviously Madame Gao and the hand, which is interesting because I thought Madame Gao was triad. Before. I think they're kind of combining the two of them.
I think it's a little bit of a backdoor retcon at this point.
Yeah.
Because we had her set up against the triad later in these episodes.
Yeah. But if I'm remembering Daredevil correctly, they had a hand representative and Madame Gao at their meetings with the Kingpin.
Like, this is true. But that's when all the different ones were working together and relatively regulated. That is not the case right now.
No, the gangs are loose in the goose. But we have Harold kind of facing these repercussions. He's told to kneel to her, and he has to kneel onto the glass. And it's this kind of scene where it's like, oh, this is much bigger than we thought it was. Like, we find out in the next episode that the hand is way deep into this. Like, way deep in everything.
Let's just talk about Harold for a bit.
Let's do it.
He's been a very interesting mover and shaker. And I like that we got a little more about him. I like that we got the story about I died and now there's this.
Mm.
And I like that he's able to use Danny as a puppet, pretty much, because Danny loves him and trusts him and just wanted to hear that he was home. And, oh no, you're under the influence of my sworn enemies. That's terrible. Whether or not he's using Danny as a puppet, or if he plans on using Danny as leverage to get out from under the hand's thumb, if you will, is remains to be seen. But what I love about it is that he's such a good manipulator. He is immediately able to make himself the good guy and continue to make Ward seem like the bad guy with, we'll give him his shares. We'll give him his title.
Sure.
Well, how about his dad's office? Great idea. And just make himself look so great to Danny and make Ward look like the bad guy that he's been set up as, and still have Ward on a string and blaming him for things that aren't his fault.
Like, for sure.
I love
Harold
watching
is a really good
this.
Character. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's so messed up, but I love watching it.
Well, let's get into episode 4 then, if we're going to start talking about Harold, because there's a lot of Harold moments in episode 4. We leave episode 3, Rolling Thunder, Cannon Punch, with Danny following Ward, who has successfully bought out the pier, which is what Harold has been telling him to do this entire time.
And that was such a good scene with the organ donor.
Yes.
Like, that is why you keep Joy around. She is the heart of the series. She knows how this stuff works.
Again,
money's not going to be a factor. You can save your nephew's life tonight is the factor.
Again, Ward not successfully doing anything. It is It is Joy saving him. I don't know about you. I thought she was taking him to like an underground fight, like the fights. Like I thought that's where they were going, and then I was like, oh, this is better.
No, I didn't know where she was going to take him, but yeah. I figured that whatever she told him, there would be a detour beforehand.
Yeah. So we end it with Danny noticing that Ward is like sneaking off and taking a phone call. So Danny follows Ward to a to the
penthouse.
To the penthouse, and we see Danny's second mutation, which is his ability to get into elevators he's not supposed to get into. He's very good at that.
Somehow? Question mark. Did we pickpocket the guard? Did we?
He's just very good. It's his second mutation. Number one, Iron Fist. Number two, Elevator Man.
Well, with it, Elevator Man.
Yeah.
Within the first 5 minutes of the first episode, we saw him kind of pickpocket a little.
Yeah.
And have to use it to get up to the top floors of Rand Enterprises. Are you telling me that these elevators that house a guy who's supposed to be dead and is in very deep cover don't work the same way?
There's a palm print up top.
At least he couldn't get past the palm print. I'm glad we didn't try to hand wave that.
So Danny, a superhero in this movie, or in this series, gets pushed out of a window by a rich punk with zero martial arts training.
I honestly don't think it was any of them. I think that there was some of the hand hanging out in there. And I think that there is perpetually some of the hand in that apartment, just hanging out in the shadows.
I think Ward says he did it. I think in episode
four, Ward says he did it, but I don't believe him.
Well, I want to live in that world where Ward isn't the one that pushed Danny Rand. And then we see this interesting moment, which maybe explains why he's not as powerful as he should be, where he prays to Kunlun and asks for help, and then he falls again and blacks out.
Oh, I read that as, "We who are about to die salute you."
I thought it was more him asking for power, and he did not receive it. And so I'm wondering if maybe in the future we find out that the way he left Kunlun was not the most ceremonial, or maybe he wasn't supposed to. You know, it's a forbidden city, one of the cities, seven cities of heaven.
It's one of the seven capital cities of heaven, but it sure looks like hell.
Well, I mean, by heaven, they mean it's not the Judeo-Christian idea of heaven. They just mean, like, a different plane, basically. One of the cities is, I believe, just people who are filled with spiders. So, Spider Bride is an interesting character in the Immortal Weapons series. But we end the episode.
Still more interesting than White Boy Danny Rand.
way more interesting. She's very weird. So we end the episode with Danny blacking out. We start episode 4, 8 Diagram Dragon Palm, with Danny waking up again after being knocked out. He's on a couch. We get Ward saying, like, yeah, I pushed you out. Why are you following me? And then
I loved this entire conversation.
And then we get this awesome Harold thing where Harold acts like he is laying his cards out, but I don't believe he is. But he is acting like he's being very vulnerable.
And he's acting like he's trapped, like this is something that doesn't benefit me at all. And while that might be the case, we have reason to doubt him.
Yeah.
Obviously, because he's doing the dance puppets dance thing in the background.
And we know that Harold is put in a box, like we saw in the episode before, that the hand definitely is putting Harold in a box. But we pretty much know he wants to use Danny to destroy the hand, which is what he said he's for.
The question
as an immortal weapon.
And this is what I'm wondering is, does he want to actually use Danny for that? Or is he just telling Danny that to keep him on a leash while he's still on the hand's leash, thereby making Danny an extension of the hand? We still don't know how much of this is actually trapped by the hand and how much of this is just deception. And I don't know that we'll get that answer anytime soon. I'm definitely reading it as making myself very sympathetic for this guy so that when push comes to shove, he cares about me too much to go against me, regardless of whatever affiliation I have with the hand. He's painted himself as a victim of Danny's enemies.
The scene with Gao, or what we assume to be Gao, obviously
it's Gao.
The scene with obvious Gao, to me, points to the fact that he is trapped, because she made him get on his knees and bloody his hands. Like he tells Ward, like, this is the repercussions of me leaving the penthouse. Like I think to that end, we see that he is definitely in a box.
He's also being a manipulative abuser.
But he's also being a manipulative abuser. I think maybe he wants to use Danny to control the hand, maybe not destroy them. But I think he definitely does not like being like having to kneel to them in that scene.
No.
Yeah, like I don't know. I don't think he's a good servant for them.
Havoc 6280 in the chat says Wards and Marvel are iffy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
Havoc,
yep.
You said it without me saying it.
Being someone named Ward in a Marvel franchise is just like, and that's a target right on your back right there.
And then, so we get this really interesting scene. We know that Harold died. He for sure died of cancer. And then the hand did their thing and they resurrected him. And I thought it was a really good, that moment where he's like, yeah, I remember what it felt like to take my last breath.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
It's a very well-written speech.
That's really intense. And we go from that to the press conference with Danny, where he, they say, follow the script.
I was expecting, like, Zootopia-level screws up of press conferences.
Same here. And he nailed it.
Yeah.
He really nailed it.
And then was really generous and the whole, they saw that I had issues and they referred me to this doctor. And I'm like, holy cow, when did you become a spin doctor?
Yeah.
Third mutation, question mark?
Third mutation, Danny always doing the right thing.
Spin doctoring.
Spin doctor.
And then just that bit about, you know, kindness, kindness is the most important something. And I'm like, where has that philosophy been the past two or three episodes?
And then we get an awesome, so far my favorite scene with Danny is the boardroom scene.
Yeah.
Like that, I was like, okay, this is the characterization that we've needed. Like, he is someone who has been raised in a Buddhist temple and been raised with these philosophies. I don't want him telling people what Buddhism is or telling people like why they should be doing something Buddhist. I want to see him run his company based off of those philosophies that he learned in that temple. So when he said, like, profiting off of other people's suffering is never acceptable, I was like, yes, okay, this is a characterization of Danny Rand that I really appreciate, and I think is really interesting.
That I'm down for. And then we can make our profits in other places, understanding that, yeah, we have a ton of other enterprises, and we can make profits there.
Yes. It's also, Marvel always likes to use their shows to talk about like political things, and right now a big topic in the United States is like how expensive pharmaceuticals are, and like whether or not that's ethical or not to have your pharmaceuticals be that expensive.
$50 a pill is staggering.
And with if it costs you $5 to make them, it doesn't make any sense. But that kind of stuff happens in the real world.
Oh yeah.
So I appreciate that Marvel's getting at that.
It's like EpiPens now being $600 a pop because
some people can make that money because people need EpiPens.
Yeah, but it's only the branded EpiPens.
Yes.
Like if you ask for an off-brand or if you get a prescription for the medicine that's in it and a syringe and the training to do it, it's so much cheaper.
It is a lot cheaper.
Like, pro tips, guys.
Yeah.
You can actually do this.
But it was a really cool scene. We get to see the boardroom. They're like, what? Like all the stuffy boardroom members, like,
dragging the chair over to sit by Joy. And I'm just like, oh, this is skin-crawlingly awkward. I love it.
He really wants to sit next to Joy.
See, the thing is, this is supposed to be really awkward. This is supposed to be fish out of water until we make the turn into, no, we can't do that. We need to do this. But that opening bit with him just kind of sneaking in and the door being really loud and the dragging the chair, like, that is supposed to be horrendously awkward. And I love that they did that.
And
it's when they write something that they think is going to be cool that turns out to be horrendously awkward that I don't like it. But this I enjoyed.
This was really, really good. And I love that even though Joy is now a more sympathetic character, she's still being used to manipulate Danny. They're using her to keep Danny busy so he's out of the boardroom. And we get...
Which in turn cripples her role in the company because she is essentially Ward's backup. If he can't do a thing, he goes for her.
Yeah, exactly. But we get her occupying Danny with what's going on at, because we from Harold. Harold says you got to check out that pier. Like, this pier is what the hand wants.
So here's a question.
Go on.
Do you think Joy would be a better CEO than Ward?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think...
All signs point to yes.
I think Ward is kind of... I think Ward is an archetype we see a lot in these types of shows, but also in any kind of drama show where he is the son of a powerful man and feels impotent because of it.
Well, and, yeah, but also Dad has been dragging him around since he was maybe 10.
Exactly.
And so, again, with the abuse, like, this has been a problem.
His dad is dead, technically. Or not technically, but theoretically dead.
And legally.
And still, like...
Yanking
him around, yeah.
And then so making him... Like, he understands that this is a bad situation for him to be in. And his dad, again, turns on things to make him look like the villain with Danny and to tell him, well, I'm doing this for you. I want to hand you something successful. I'm still a victim because the hand, this and that and the other. I'm like, you made your choices and you're screwing your son over now. Like this, when he turned around and made Ward look like the villain, like Ward is now 1,000% more sympathetic than he was 5 minutes ago.
For sure.
Because we really get the extent of that now.
I mean, he was a dick when he was a kid, but it's because your dad is making you so.
And him trying to warn Danny, like, be careful, Harold only cares about Harold.
Yeah.
And it's an actual, honest-to-God, genuine warning.
Yeah, like,
showing real emotion. Which none of us were expecting.
Yeah. I 100%, the way these stories are told, I 100% would guess that Ward kills Harold and that Joy kills Ward.
I don't see Joy getting her hands directly dirty. We'll see where this goes. I can see, honestly, I think, is his name Kyle? Kyle the intern?
Yeah.
Kyle the secretary?
Kyle's fantastic.
I think Kyle's going to kill Harold.
That would be interesting as well.
We didn't see him in either of these two episodes, and I honestly missed him because I rather liked him. But
he's
because he has all of this knowledge and all of this basically inside baseball knowledge, mm-hmm. I can absolutely see him being a spanner in the works.
I feel like,
and I cannot wait.
I feel like Kyle's going to be a sad death. Like, the hand's going to get upset with Harold, and we'll see Kyle impaled on 1,000 swords or something like that.
I hope not.
Me too. But like, I feel like he's going to be used to manipulate our feelings because he's such a cool character. So, like, of course the hand is going to kill him in a horrible way.
So we'll see for that.
So then we get this scene where Danny all of a sudden has a penthouse. It's a celebration scene.
Can you make me a vodka tonic? Is it just vodka and tonic? Then I think I can.
But it is an interesting question because, like, I don't think Danny's ever drank alcohol before.
They,
like,
might have had some in Kunlun. You never know.
There could have been some. I guess some monks.
Ceremonial wine. I don't know.
Drunken style.
You can do drunken style without being drunk. I've seen it, and it is a wonder to behold.
That's true, but it's much better when they are drunk because it's just fun.
Well, I've seen it in high school, so I sincerely hope that Sensei Williamson was not drunk at the time.
Everyone hopes that for Sensei Williamson. Sensei Williamson, shout out.
He was amazing. Anyway.
But we see this kind of, like, nice scene. There's... Are you shipping Danny and Joy?
We'll see.
Are you shipping Danny and Colleen?
Definitely not that.
Definitely not that?
Yeah, no. At this point, Colleen is still just like, why do you exist to Danny? And I'm like, no, I absolutely get that. He wandered his way into your life and won't go away.
Sure.
Like, I understand. Like, he's a cute dog, but he came in, peed on your rug, and bit your students, and then still is acting like he's cute. Like, no.
Yeah.
You know better.
Now you gotta leave this. This dog has to leave. I thought it would have been really interesting storytelling if, even though Danny was the CEO and now a billionaire of this company, that he still stayed in the dojo with Colleen. Because, again, like, this is...
I think she'd go nuts.
I really think
she'd just go nuts.
I think it's another missed opportunity for storytelling with Danny, where it's like, he hasn't slept in a real bed in 15 years. He hasn't he hasn't stayed in a place that wasn't a dojo in 15 years. And, like, it would have been a really interesting storytelling where he, like, comes to his apartment, and he tries to sleep on the bed, and he can't, and then you see him on the floor in the dojo again the next morning, because it's the only place he feels comfortable. Like, again, like, I think that would have been a really interesting show, don't tell. Like, if Danny is out of his element. New York is not the element that he is used to.
Yeah.
I
if he's going to be on the floor of a dojo somewhere, don't let it be Colleen's, because, oh my God, she has enough to deal with, and she told you to get out more than once.
That's true.
And that's where I start hitting that wall of my opinion is more important than yours. My needs are more important than yours.
Sure.
Like, we've had so much of that from Danny, and some of it is fish out of water, and the rest of it really just comes across as entitled white boy.
For sure.
Even if it's not what they're intending, it's absolutely what it smacks of. And that is my biggest problem with the writing.
Yeah.
Just like, stop. Please stop. I'm supposed to like you. I like her so much more. I'm on her side for everything.
She's a fantastic character. We did finally get a fight scene where the Iron Fist looks like a badass. Like, we finally got one.
And he didn't even use it. It was just break the hatchet. And I appreciated that a lot.
He didn't use it until he was holding open an elevator door. But we finally got a scene where Danny looked like a badass. There were some beautiful shots in this. The ceiling shots were all really, really cool. Really appreciated. I liked it. It looked like a Chinese, like with the hatchets out.
Yeah.
It looked like a Chinese gangster movie.
Like, on one hand, I get what they were going for here. Like, this was a lot of fun to watch. But on the other hand, you sit down and go, hallway fight.
Yeah.
Because capital H, capital F, hallway fight.
Yeah.
These
Marvel
are a
Netflix
thing
show.
In Marvel Netflix shows.
Yeah.
But you think of the Daredevil hallway fight, both seasons, and you think of Luke Cage going through, and you just, we have hallway fights past, and then we have this one, and it's like, well, this is nice. The split screen is interesting. I don't think we've had split screen in fight scenes before.
We have.
But it's still just like, that happened. It wasn't bad. It wasn't amazing. It happened.
Yeah, it was definitely not, it was not Daredevil season 2 hallway fight level with the chain and the biker gang, but it was still nice. Like again, this is the first instance we've really seen Danny look like a superhero. Like, we saw him do an aerial over a taxi cab, and it was like, that was cool. We'd like to see more of that, but we didn't. We haven't. He got hit with brass knuckles.
We got stuck in legal hell.
Yeah, and he got hit with brass knuckles from behind. But we get a cool hallway fight. We see the Iron Fist. I wish the Iron Fist made, like, a low humming noise. I don't like that it's silent. I wish there was just, like, a low humming noise.
Silent but deadly.
Yeah. Yeah. Danny goes after the triad. He goes and follows them. There's a confrontation. They're like, why are you here?
I appreciate the dynamic that we had with this triad here, because it was Danny going to find information. Well, why did you take the pier? Well, I have no idea, but someone else wanted it. And the second he name drops the hand, they all back off immediately. Like, they understand who the big dog is in town.
Yeah.
And at that point, they were willing to let it lie. It was, send her our deepest apologies. We're very sorry. We had no idea.
Yeah.
And then it's Harold that pushes it one step further by going in and taking the life of the guy that hit his daughter. And it's like, on one hand, I get it. You're overprotective. You're dad, you haven't seen her in a decade. Like, I understand that. On the other hand, that is someone who had backed off, who didn't plan on moving any further, and then you went in and punished them more anyway. And that's what leads to Danny getting his first clue to lead him to the hand and to Madame Gao.
Yeah.
Was Harold being emotional and impulsive and wanting more and wanting to punish these people who'd pretty much already been punished.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd sympathize with a bunch of gangsters. I sympathize with them. And this is the best low-key revenge that they can do.
Yeah, without letting the hand know that they are taking revenge against them, they have informed Danny in a beautiful little box. They have given
him heroin
and a note written in a very specific calligraphy, like, this is, if you want the hand, you follow this.
And the thing is, they could have, anyone could have gotten that heroin from anywhere. That's the sort of thing where if you know where to look, you can get it from the streets. He could have walked down the wrong alley and gotten that. And so that's a clue. If the hand doesn't find the box and if no one says anything, that's a clue that can't be traced back to the triad. So it's this very smart little thing, but it's also them tipping over the first domino and praying that there's more to back it up.
Yes. And I think it's interesting. We see that side of Harold where he is malicious and aggressive, which we've seen him like doing martial arts training. I really hope he gets like if there's going to be a fight with Danny Rand between Danny and Harold, I hope to hell Harold gets like a mystical power up or something like that. Because if like a 48-year-old guy holds his own against Iron Fist in a martial arts fight,
and is only just starting to learn weapons,
like again, it's just not interesting writing, and it doesn't make sense. It's like when celebrities are in professional wrestling things and they can beat a professional wrestler. It breaks the reality. It's like, why is, you know, Britney Spears' husband able to hold his own against a professional wrestler? It breaks the reality that they're making.
I appreciated that Stephen Amell was able to take down Stardust, though.
You can see
Stephen Amell doing that because he does those workouts.
It was Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes should not be able to lose to some dumb actor. He's the American Nightmare, damn it. But we did, like, we finally got some Danny being badass, which was good. Like, I appreciated that. Like, we finally got him acting like an actual superhero.
Yeah. And then going and tracking down information and being willing to talk with them instead of immediately flying in and beating the hell out of all of them.
Yes, and we did get awkward dubbed Mandarin again.
Absolutely.
Which is... Again, like, just you should have hired an actor that spoke Chinese and knew martial arts.
Take a shot every time I ask him to cue up Rolling in the Deep, because, we could have had it all.
Yeah.
It's going to be once per episode at this point.
Yeah. It's the awkward Mandarin dub is really weird, and it's the person they found doing an impression of Finn doing Chinese is just very weird. And then
you can tell it's not him, but they're also trying their best. And I feel like there wasn't a lot of, I hesitate to say preparation, but given the story that Finn Jones only trained for 3 weeks, and I don't know if that's only had 3 weeks to train or only trained for 3 weeks.
Which are two different things.
They are two very different things.
Yeah.
And that they only had 15 minutes to rehearse a fight scene before they shot it, which is ludicrous.
That's insane.
That's nuts. So I'm wondering how much pre-planning went into this and how much this series itself was hamstrung because they have defenders that they're working up to. And this is just, we need to knock it out so we can get to this piece.
I have a feeling that there was a lot of, we need to get the defenders. So a lot of their time was cut off.
But that weakens one of your cornerstones. And that's a huge problem.
It weakens one of your cornerstones.
That we're seeing now.
And if you have only 15 minutes to plan a martial arts sequence, when your character's superpower is that they are good at martial arts. Like, maybe plan on that more.
And once again, we go back to, if you know you're only going to have this, you hire the trained martial artist who can also act.
Yes.
Because they had him in the wings and they went, no.
Yep.
And I don't understand why, because obviously I wasn't in the room.
Yeah.
But that just seems like a really weird decision to me.
And I'll be the first to admit, and that I was one of the people that before this came out, I was like, it makes sense that Danny Rand is a white guy. I was like, his character in the comic books, and I still think his character in the comic books works as a white person, fish out of water, went to Kunlun as a child, and came back and didn't understand the way the world worked.
And we had some discussion of that in this episode, and I liked that we had that discussion and that he was able to talk about it.
Yeah.
But I don't think what he talked about and what the flashbacks have shown very well in the writing for Danny's character.
I 100% agree.
Which is why it keeps coming across as entitled white guy and not confused man. And to address some things that are being said in the chat, we go back to entitled white guy because he is very often talking down to people of color. That's when it becomes entitled white guy and not just entitled guy.
Yeah.
That's when we start doing I can Asian better than you. And it's just like, no.
Yeah, there is something specifically weird about a white guy telling an Asian person about Buddhism and like in teaching them about it. It's very weird and very and off-putting. But ignoring that, also the writing is not consistent, like you're saying. I like this show. I want to say that. I like the show. I think the show is going to an interesting place. I think we are going to see a nice culmination of Danny getting his powers. I think maybe he left Kunlun. We've got 5 minutes. Let's do predictions, because I've got some. So what do you think is going to happen in the next 2 episodes, which we're going to be reviewing next week?
Next week. And we haven't seen them yet. So,
we have not.
Y'all were somewhat okay at keeping the comments spoiler-free, and guess what? I actually do read those, so please continue to keep the comments spoiler-free for our sakes and for the people who are watching along with us. If you are watching along with us, you have a lot of self-control. Well done. I keep hearing that this gets really good around 6 and 7.
Right.
And this is a show that I want to like. I'm not sitting here going, it's terrible, I'll never watch it again, because I've left after shows because the shows have been like that. I wouldn't be here if I didn't want to give this show a chance.
That's interesting, because most Marvel shows on Netflix, 6 and 7 are like their worst episodes. Like,
yeah,
they have the weird
them,
dip in the middle.
Yeah, a lot of Daredevil took the turn. Some people will argue that Luke Cage's turn was not good. I will argue that it was just fine.
Killgrave in a box.
I liked Killgrave in a box. I thought those were very interesting episodes.
I thought it was fine. I thought it was energetically different and weird.
But supposedly, from what I've heard, Iron Fist gets better after the 6th episode. Mm. Given that 6 episodes were all that were released for preliminary reviews, that would make sense as to why the reviews say, oh my god, what is this?
Mm.
Because if the first 6 episodes are not great, and then it takes off, I getcha. I don't know why it takes you 6 episodes to take off of a 13, 14? How many episodes?
13.
Of a 13. It takes you half the series to start taking off. Like, I feel like that's not well paced. I want to like this. I am hanging on to see if it gets as good as people say it is.
Yeah.
They have a lot of irons in the fire. I want to see if Harold really is the victim that he's acting like, or if he's another level of manipulator, or if it's some very interesting thing in between. I want to see where Ward is going, because he is both the victim and the jackass.
Yeah.
I want to see if anything happens with Kyle. Joy is a delight. I want more of her.
I want more
of Colleen. Like, it has so much potential.
Yeah.
And I want to see it take advantage of that potential. But nearly 4 hours in, with the exception of a few moments here and there that are fun, our main character is this mansplaining, mostly bore, whose past doesn't match up with how he's acting now.
Mm-hmm.
And I love almost everyone else. Like, I feel like this is backwards.
It's interesting. My prediction.
Go.
I'm just gonna keep a simple prediction. I think Danny didn't leave Kunlun under the most I don't think he was supposed to. I think he snuck out or was banished or something like that. Because there have been stories in the comic books like that. And I think we're gonna see that's why he's having trouble focusing his chi. And the only way he will be able to focus his chi is if he actually addresses his childhood trauma and actually thinks back, because we've seen where he says like the pain helps him focus, and we saw that
that's not a healthy coping mechanism.
We saw that in the mental hospital when he used that door power and he made one for himself.
And so
I think Danny will get a big power upgrade hearing that around episode 6 or 7. I think Colleen, he's going to need Colleen. He's going to chase that heroin.
Puff the magic dragon.
Yeah, he's going to get addicted to the horse. And he's going to need Colleen to like help him fight the hand. And we're going to get some really fun like ninja versus Danny and Colleen moments. And eventually,
hopefully,
just because of the released photos, we know Night Nurse is coming around. I want to see some Claire.
Yes.
Like, I hope she's in this sometime soon, because she's the watcher. She's Uatu the Watcher in the Netflix series.
She is the best overarching part of all of this.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that she keeps coming up and is just like, why? Why me? Why is this my life?
Yeah.
Fine. Sit down. I will heal you. Like, she's the best.
We met her mom and Luke Cage. It was fantastic.
Just everything is wonderful.
I'd also like to see Misty Knight.
Yeah.
Because I know they're probably not going to go with the comic books where Misty Knight is Danny's love interest in the comic books. But I'd still like to see her interact with him.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to see some police. This is the first one where there's been no police interaction.
Yeah, and we finally got to see him go down to Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to wait until Defenders to get some of that interaction. And then, again, supposedly from what I've been hearing, we've got a really good fight coming down the tubes in episode 8.
Great.
Which, this is what I've been hearing, and then I cut people off because I don't want to hear more, because what are spoilers?
Yeah.
But yeah, this is why I'm sitting here going, this series has potential, and it is just this slow, stumbling start, and I'm impatient because I want there to be payoff. I want them to take all of these irons that they have in the fire and make something out of it, and we're not there yet. And we're 4 hours in, and we're not there yet, and it's frustrating. I want more, show. I know you're capable.
But there's potential for something exciting, and we will be here to talk about that excitement next Tuesday, talking about episodes 5 and 6.
Which also have long 4 and 5 word martial art moves names that we don't know off the top of our heads.
And I didn't write them down. Katie, if people want to agree with you about white mansplaining, where can they find you?
Or if you want to yell at me and we have a spirited debate in 140 characters or less, I am down for that too. You can find me on all of the social medias and YouTube at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. I'm on several shows here. We have, I just lost all of them. We have Arrow on Wednesday nights at 10. And starting this week, Sunday at 8 p.m., we are starting the Samurai Jack after show. Oh. It is going to be a blast. I am also on Gather Your Party on Geek and Sundries. That's 7 p.m. Pacific on twitch.tv/geekandsundry.
Awesome. I'm Jesse Klein. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JessKlein1. That's JessKlein, the number one. I will talk to you about Iron Fist comics as much as you want to. I've read them all a bunch. I love the Immortal series, the Immortal Weapons. You can also see me on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. here at ABTV. It's coming back. I'm super excited about it. Until then, we'll see you next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.